Hello, this is producer Ben, and if you enjoy listening to great Catholic content like this, then please consider supporting The Quest Atlanta, where we do our very best to make Catholic content that's engaging, thought-provoking, and spiritually fruitful. So if that sounds like the kind of content you want to listen to, then please consider going over to thequestatlanta.com and dropping a dollar or two in the old tip jar. Thanks so much, and keep on listening.
AM 1160 The Quest presents Honest to God, What's on Your Mind? A show for young adults by young adults.
Hello, this is Joey, and on this episode of Honest to God, we talk about art and how it relates to our faith. In today's world, art is so prevalent in our lives, but how often do we look at the art around us and really consider the deeper meaning behind it? Art is such a purely human creation, and if we take time to think about it, then we might just grow closer to our Creator. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
All right. Hello and welcome, everybody. Pumped to be here today. We got Patrick, we got Joey, we got JJ in the house, producer Ben, as always, and show notes Benny. He might be here. He might not. I could be staring into the void and just thinking about all the bad decisions I've ever made in my life, or I could be looking into the eyes of our very own show notes Benny. Maybe both. You'll never know. No, but we're super excited. This episode, we're going to be talking about faith and art, all forms of it. We're going to see where that goes, where that road takes us. But first, we're going to begin as we do all things in prayer. JJ, with all your Byzantine, putting the Baptist to shame, extemporaneous prayer, I'm ready when you are.
I'm going to bring a whole bunch of good Byzantine out.
But, let's do it.
In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Lord Jesus, Father God, thank you for bringing us together today to talk about art. We just want to meditate upon the fact that beauty, all beauty points to you. You made this world, you made us, and anything we can do to recognize the beauty in it is recognizing your hand in our lives. I just want to say, Holy God, Holy Mighty, Holy Immortal, have mercy on us. Father, and Holy Spirit, amen.
Killer. You got us a couple of Father Gods, a couple in there. That was nice. Big shout out to the mega churches of the world for that extemporaneous prayer inspiration. No, it was good. It was very good. Thank you so much. So, JJ, you've been here before very recently. Last show, I think. I don't remember. So long ago since we filmed it. So you just owe us one. And then you guys owe us five. Five fun facts. It got to be fun. I'm excited. We're going to find out right now. JJ.
Well, yeah. I've got beautiful, beautiful locks of hair and luscious, some even say.
I'd say luscious.
And, I was thinking that. And when it gets long enough, I want to cut it off and donate it to Locks of Love. So I have luscious locks of love.
Luscious locks of love. Triple L. JJ, I like that. JJ, triple L. All
right. Double J, triple L.
That's awesome. All right, what about you, Joe? Your hair is significantly less luscious than
I know.
Flo.
I can't compete. Thank you for having me, by the way. I was born in Connecticut. I'm from the Northeast. I have never had a dog. And if I would have had a dog as a child, Golden Retriever was the dream.
Totally.
Dog.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
But it never, mm-hmm. never worked out. Yeah. Family was allergic.
Selfish.
Yeah. I am the director of Respect Life Ministry for the Archdiocese of Atlanta. I am co-writer and director of Garden the Musical, which we can talk more about hopefully today, that has showed in the state of Louisiana a few productions, but will be happening in Atlanta this summer. Very exciting. And I also, just as for more fun, I act and have done improv comedy in the past. So,
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's super cool. All right, we're gonna play a bunch of games here on the show, Ben. Get ready. You've done improv, haven't you, Ben?
Once or twice.
You give me the I've done improv vibe. That's for
I've
sure.
done like improv that wasn't really improv as like a 13, 14 year old when like I saw one improv show. I was like, I can definitely do that with no training or
so good.
Pre-thought. I could just do that, take any prompt and just flawlessly.
Yeah. I love doing improv. I did the just with high school and I worked at Holy Spirit Prep. I was we had our improv troupe and I got to mess with it. It was just fun. I love it. So that's really cool. I dig it. Patrick.
Yeah, so Patrick Blonsky, I'm a filmmaker, do video production. Five facts about me. So I was born and raised in New York, so I'm a New Yorker. Came down here because of the film industry. I cage dived with great whites in South Africa.
Oh, that's cool.
Looking back, I don't know if I would do it again. I'm going to the Holy Land this year in mid-March, and I'm going to be 33, so it's going to be pretty crazy.
That's awesome.
The age when Christ obviously like started his whole ministry. I'm Polish, speak fluently too.
Wow.
And fifth, I also, and then I have my own podcast on Instagram where I talk about something called symbolism, which maybe we can possibly
do. Absolutely. That. That's awesome. There's a large-ish Polish community in Atlanta, right? Working in Catholic schools, I've taught a number of Polish, the children of like immediate immigrants from Poland.
Yeah, there's quite a bit. The thing is that Atlanta's so spread out. It isn't like in New York where you have like a specific community. So it's like sometimes you just randomly bump into one.
Right.
There is a Polish store, I believe, up in Lawrence.
A Polish store, like supermarket kind of deal?
Yeah, where they have... actually, today was Fat Thursday, so that was a good time to get Ponchki, the jelly donuts, basically. But yeah, no, when I went to Poland in 2019 in March, when I was waiting for my train to go to my stop, I was talking to a guy and he was like, oh, I used to live in Atlanta for like a couple of years. Yeah. It was like one of those small world things. Where, and he's like, yeah, I worked in Roswell and stuff.
That's awesome. Crazy. Where in Poland is your family from? Do you still have family there right now?
Yeah, so I have my mom's side of the family is mostly in a town about an hour outside of Warsaw called Siedlec. And then my dad is from a town called Wasp, which is like 30 minutes or so from Łódź, which is like right in the middle of Poland. Right. But yeah, that's where most of my family
is. That's super cool. No, well, that's a interesting part of the world to be in right now, that close to all the action over there. So prayers for your family and everything. Thanks. We're big supporters. This episode of Honest to God is actually brought to you by the country of Poland, believe it or not.
Yep, the whole country.
Big shout out to the entire country of Poland.
Unanimous, right?
Yeah, every single one of them individually donated to make this show possible. So way to go, Poland. Big fans of you guys. All right, so believe it or not, this the topic today is not Poland. As much as we should do a Polish episode, we'd be happy to.
I'm leaving now. I was misinformed.
Remarkably un-Polish Joey doesn't want to be here anymore. But we are going to be talking about faith, and we're going to be talking about art. And I would love to dive in. I was back and forth. JJ, I'm not sure what your credentials are to be here, but I'm glad you're here. Mm-hmm. But with the concept of symbolism and Joey's musical, I don't know which one. JJ, since you're not contributing, what do you, if you had to pick one, what do you want to start with? You want to start with symbolism. Musicals or symbolism?
Symbolism.
Oh, well, I mean... It got started by this guy, his name is Jonathan Pageau, but he, symbolism is a reference to that things we experience in the world are not necessarily arbitrary, and a symbol isn't what our understanding of it, it's just a metaphor. It's almost like a language of God, the way we can actually interact and communicate with the world. So the best example I give is when you see a face in the clouds, you're actually seeing a face. It's not some weird psychological survival thing. It's you're actually interacting with, it's like a way you interact with the world because it causes you to act on it. This is basically it.
So how do you do a whole podcast on that?
Well, that's super interesting. Yeah, because it basically stems from Genesis at first because it outlines how the whole world looks. And if you look at it, not in the material creation of the world, but more of like our conscious or the way we perceive the world, it makes a lot of sense. So, In the whole thing, he creates two opposites constantly. So he creates, water and earth and male, female. So he's constantly just creating opposites, but at different levels, you can say, of a hierarchy. And so the best one way to understand is a seed is like masculine. It's like what holds an identity. And then, something like the earth is, that's why it's always Mother Earth. It's because it takes the seed and then it causes it to grow. And then obviously, and so if you take that concept kind of like goes through all, you can use that concept to not just biblical text, but even to fairy tale stories. So like when you read something and, sometimes like even with what's the beanstalk?
Yeah, Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah, Jack and the Beanstalk. Sure. I mean, that's kind of what it is. I mean, he gets this... these seeds, you can think of an identity and it brings it up into heaven. But in heaven, there's these, you could almost think of like, there's these monsters, right? Like giants.
Sure.
And he takes the treasure up there and it's kind of like with that. So it's funny because when you start learning more about it, I mean, it takes a lot of reading and just kind of like also shedding your materialism from you a little bit sometimes. But you almost, what's it called? You understand the world. The world starts to become a lot more, you can say, like reasonable to a certain extent. Like you're not disconnected from it.
Yeah, that whole, what were you going to say, JJ?
No, yeah, I was just going to say, I feel like it's because everything God made was too beautiful to just do it once. Just so, that's why, like, the Testaments, there's the old and the new, and they fulfill, the new fulfills the old.
The new Eve and the new Adam.
The new Eve, yeah. The new Ark of the Covenant, and humans, he went all out with that one. There's so many of us, and just in Jesus, the Word of God, we can see him in so many different places.
Well, I'm mostly interested in that last thing you said about how when you start to understand these things more, it connects us and it grounds us and we understand things better, because I'm sure we're going to get pretty deep into some art stuff here in a little bit and talking about, you know, be it modern art or modern architecture or whatever. But a theme that I'm on pretty regularly is this idea that we live this, especially at least in the Western affluent world, we live these lives that are unnatural and artificial in so many ways, because I feel like we're increasingly disconnected from the world as it is. And I don't want to make a distinction between the world and the natural world and the world, but there's just the world. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's super interesting. I want to come back to that in a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Joey, different track, musicals, rock and roll, brother. All right. So this is off brand for me. If you were to see me in my classroom now or whatever, I'm a big fan of flannel. I'm rocking some python skin cowboy boots right now. I'm all about musical. I did musicals in high school. I've fought for all. I'm super into musical theater in general. And I have no idea. I wouldn't know you from Adam before you walked in here today. But tell me about what you're doing, and tell me about like whatever this you wrote and directed something, right?
Sure. Yeah. So, it all started with Greg and Lizzie Boudreau produced this album. They're a married couple, and they produced this like standalone album just that reflected kind of on their own experience of dating, you know, getting married, the struggles and joys of that. And also them being impacted by John Paul II's Theology of the Body. That's part of it.
Cool.
I heard this album, it was back in 2014, and I was inspired to write a musical around that existing album that, you know, would reflect the fullness of JP2's vision of the Theology of the Body, which we can talk more about in a second. I kind of got their permission, and then I'm like, hey, I'm thinking of doing this. Is this okay? And they're like, yeah, okay, yeah, sure. And I don't think they really thought anything would come of it. But then like a year later, I showed up at their house with the script, and they're like, okay, maybe we should talk about this more seriously. So they eventually saw something in this and kind of signed on and say, we want to actually join with you and write this with you. So it evolved from just like changing some lyrics to fully adapting these songs and creating new songs that would become a full-length musical, Garden.
Garden is the name of the
Garden
musical?
Is the name of the music. Yeah. So when I say musical, I'm talking about a live theater show with like live band and actors and sets so and cool. script. It's a retelling of the Genesis story, so not totally disconnected from a Patrick.
Yeah, I was going to say there's
some similarities. It's telling the Adam and Eve story again, but in a way you've never seen before, because it conveys the whole gospel through the lens of the body, through John Paul II's vision.
And it's based on the relationship of these two people?
It's based on Adam and Eve, yeah.
Adam and Eve, not this Boudreau, Mr. and Mrs.
Oh,
Boudreau.
Yeah, it started with them. Well, that's what makes it more real, because it started from this album that you could find on Spotify. It's called To the Dust by Greg and Lizzie. For information on the musical, you can go to gardenthemusical.com. But yeah, it starts with like a real man and woman and their experiences of joys and sorrows and brokenness and love. But that's what like gives this like grounds it in reality. But then it like I bring my own contribution of my own experiences, but it resonates with everyone because it talks about humanity's experience. It talks about man and woman's experience of how John Paul II reflects upon us. So this is like unlike any other play because it's so deeply getting to the heart of like our creation.
Don't take this the wrong way, Joey.
Sure.
Is there a market for a theology of the body themed musical?
Okay.
I mean, dude, no, I dig great. It. It sounds great. Question.
Okay. So when you say that, is there a market for a theology of the body? If we brand it like that, probably not, right? What if I brand like Thomas Aquinas, the musical, a dance special?
Right? I would watch the heck out of that. I would pay pay-per-view if just based on that title alone.
I think that would be great. The five ways would be like a
the
five
dance special.
Right? Okay, but I think part of the issue is my desire is to spread the theology of the body of what it really is to the whole world. The world doesn't know what I mean when I say theology of the body.
Sure, right.
But if I say, hey, you know that ache deep inside of your heart, that ache that often sometimes we're so disconnected from, that beauty and art reconnects us to this longing that comes from your deepest aspirations for love and communion, this desire for ecstasy and bliss for all eternity. You know, those experiences you've had with man and woman, you know, the joys of that, you know, those experiences you've had in relationships where you've been hurt, where you felt used. What if there's a way that I can put my finger on it? Moreover, what if there's a hope that is given to the church on how to make sense of all these experiences and direct me to authentic love and to the fullness of my humanity? There's a market for that.
Yeah. I still might watch the Thomas Aquinas dance first, I mean, but I'd watch that afterwards.
That's the highest demand.
No, that's beautiful, though. But isn't, I mean, what both of you are saying, and sorry, JJ, once again, feel free to jump in. I just didn't have that cool backstory with you. Mm-hmm. What I'm hearing from both of you guys, though, is this emphasis on like art form, whatever form of art that is, right? Talking visually, talking musically, talking whatever. But this emphasis on art in some way connecting us with truth. And so this is, it sounds like a dumb question, but I'm curious, what is art?
So I think that's in general, I think that's a silly question because I view art not, I don't view that art has any value in itself. So I think that art is just a skill, let's say. So like there used to be an art of cheese making, mm-hmm. right? So the purpose was to create cheese. So you couldn't make a banana and say, this is cheese now, that there's not this arbitrariness to it. So the purpose of art, similar to what he was saying, is to kind of like catch the identity or the beauty of something and try to get as close to it as possible.
Okay.
So to keep using the cheesemaker reference, like a cheesemaker, when he makes brie, it's not to make the most delicious cheese, but the closest thing that he can get to what it means to be brie. It's similar with art. So I think the concept that art is just something to be looked at in a museum is also kind of silly. It should be something that a community could participate with in a mm-hmm. way. So, you know, when you have a statue in a town, for example, in the old times, it was something, you know, it was kind of like the hero of that town. And you would have a day dedicated to celebrating him for the existence of that town or whatever it may have be. So it draws community together. It's not meant to criticize itself mm-hmm. like a lot of contemporary art likes to do, like asking that question, what is art? You know, and so you tape like a banana to a wall or something.
Let's deconstruct and then think, the concepts. Yeah.
So it's, I mean, in that case, there's like a lot less arbitrariness to it, and there's a lot more of an objective goal in mind. So that's the way I view art, I guess.
And I think that's a more traditionalist understanding of what art is. It seems like only in the past, 70 years or so, that we've really got off the wall to this deconstructing the concept of X, Y, or Z. Producer Ben, what were you going
to
say?
One thing that I always kind of come back to, and my parents do a podcast where one segment of their podcast is just talking about movies they saw that week. Mm. And what did they see? And always what they end up coming back to and what they boil films down to is it good? Is it true? Is it beautiful? And so those are the three, I guess, pillars that I have kind of started to look at all art around me at. Is this worth my time? Only if it is good, it is true, and it is beautiful. And of course, you can have some things that aren't necessarily all three of those things, like broad as you can see them just laid out there. Some things like you just need to like indulge a little bit and just have a little bit of like junk food, almost like some junk art. But when you start getting into the art that is good, that is true, that is beautiful, it almost pulls from within yourself something like something unearthly, yes. something spiritual. Right. And that's what art should do. It should invoke the spiritual.
I agree.
Through it.
And that, so no, go ahead,
please. Yeah, I feel like art is anything which directs the viewer or the partaker to something higher and true that's beyond the scope of what the art itself is of. Mm-hmm. Like Bri or Brie, for instance, if it's just like process in a plant, we don't care about that as much. And maybe it tastes really good, but we will still appreciate better someone who hands us like something being like, I made this myself. I took care of the milk myself. And that's because the object is just the cheese. But when you know that someone else did it, it becomes an art because it directs you to the effort they put in.
So is bad art or is bad art just not art? Like talking about the banana on the canvas or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. What I would say to this is that there is, it's basically you're asking the question is there objective beauty or subjective beauty, right? Is beauty in the eye of the beholder only? And I would say there's a twofold answer. Like there is absolutely objective beauty, right? And how we know what that is it's a transcendental, true, good, and beautiful, right. Like you said. So in a certain sense, like we can even understand, anything that has being, and like I think Aquinas actually talks about it. It wasn't his five ways dance, but but he does talk about like a few aspects of like being in proportion to something, right? So there's that, but I also think there is a subjective element to beauty that allows. He also says, you know, what is received according to the mode of the receiver. Mm-hmm. So there is like a sense of, okay, this is where, you know, we are at as a contemporary man and woman, and there are things that are going to resonate more with our hearts. The more that can be grafted to what is objectively true and beautiful, I think the higher the art is, right? Yeah. But I do think there is a crisis of art, as you put it, and what's happening in art reflects the inability for us to ascend, as you're talking about, to higher than kind of the stuff that ourselves are.
Yeah, and I think the thing that can make art good subjectively as opposed to objectively will always be that within the person who's being the subject, the subjective viewer, there has to be some sort of way to tie it in to something which is objective. Because I don't know why, but something I think about a lot is how in every good relationship, the man is dating or married to the most beautiful woman in the world. And
subjectively.
Subjectively. And objectively, that's wrong. Maybe there's one out there. There's supposedly one out there who's dating the most beautiful woman in the world. But
it's me.
But objectively, it can't be true for everybody. But what makes that like art that God has made for us is that what you're recognizing that, what that person is recognizing is the objectively good things about them that their brain now perceives as part of their personhood.
Okay. And I'm not disagreeing with any point, but I'm curious, right? I'm thinking about things that are cathartic. I'm thinking about a tragedy. I'm thinking about there's a work of art that shows a bunch of, it's tragically beautiful in a way where it shows all these slaves being thrown over a ship into the Atlantic. Right. And I look at that and I want to look at that. And I'm interested in that, the way that makes me feel and all of these things. And that feels maybe true, but not beautiful in the sense that you're
okay,
but it's still art.
I would say this about art. Art makes visible the invisible mysteries of our humanity. What I mean this is that animals cannot do art, right? Mm-hmm. A squirrel cannot do art. Even if a bee cannot do art, even if a bee makes a nice, beautiful nest, and we would say, wow, that's a really, really well done. that bee is responding to chemical stimuluses, and it's a purely materialistic instincts. Mm-hmm. So it's God gets the glory of that completely. I mean, God mm-hmm. always gets the glory, but art is a distinctly human thing. And so anytime we see art or we hear art, it's a visible, even with an audio song or something, it's something that's concrete for tangible. Us. Yeah. That's an expression of our hearts. And inside our hearts is the beauty of our humanity from our creation, but also the messiness of our humanity. Mm-hmm. And so that art, like you're describing, I don't even know what movie you're talking about, slaves being thrown over, sounds intense.
Hmm. It's a portrait, and I wish that I remember the name of the artist.
Yeah. Well, I'll take another one with like Les Miserables. I love the movie musical. It is mostly suffering. Right. It is like 99% suffering. But I love it because it's connecting with something real in my heart. That's the experience. That's why we know when we listen to some songs that are like, you know, the cheesy Christian song. It's not even like a worship song, but it's just like, everything's good and I have no problems in my life. It's like, I hate that. Like, right. Turn that off. You're not connecting with the realness of it. And you have to connect with the realness of like this, our suffering, to connect with the splendor of our humanity and a redemption that we're called to.
Sure. Yeah, no, I like that. One thing that I might have said this on a show recently, that an issue that I have with a lot of quote unquote Christian music or Christian films or Christian whatever is that the message is being put before the art form, right? Because when you make a beautiful work of art, regardless of, you know, what you're using, right? Regardless of if it's a song or a painting or a sculpture or whatever, right? It doesn't have to beat me over the head with the Christianity of it. If it is beautiful, then it is inherently Christian, right?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And though the secular world now fell for that too. So they're putting in all their movies and all their art, they're putting the message above the story.
Thank you for saying
and that's
that.
Why,
thank you.
That's yeah, why, so, I mean, majority of people are tired of it too.
Yeah, but that's the crisis.
And that's, what's it called? And from their side, it comes from their arbitrariness of it, right? So it's the art doesn't really matter, right? It's you know, we can deconstruct it, we can make, you know, these characters whatever we want them to be, and there's a disconnect because, like he said, there's a particular way a human being is built that we have a certain understanding, even though if you're not taught it necessarily outright, you still have like this. We all have a soul. It's like a code that's in you that we feel that something doesn't connect, and so I always say now here's like the perfect. Through the failure of the secular world is a perfect opportunity for Christians to kind of step up and make the best stories, because we do have the best stories. I mean, most of the, even the Avengers ones and stuff like that, they're all Christian based. Like the concept of him, Iron Man, spoilers, sacrificing himself to save the whole world. That's a Christian trope that never existed before ever. So, I mean, that's a Christian story and they've always been using that. It's kind of just, they've dropped the ball now and it's time to take our ball back, as you can say, and like rebound.
I totally agree. That quote you said, that through the failure of the secular world, right, Christians had this opportunity to step up. I want to get into that. I want to dig into that a little bit. But first, we're going to go to break because this has been awesome. Super excited. We're already halfway done with the show. I can't believe it. This is amazing. But stay tuned. Keep listening. Keep watching.
More of Honest to God is coming up on AM 1160, The Quest.
Let's see. I have Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, and Paramount Plus, Spotify, and Apple Music.
Is that all?
Oh, and HBO Max.
There's nothing wrong with having streaming service subscriptions, but is it helping to bring you and others closer to Christ? Consider making the cost of one of those services to be your monthly donation to The Quest. We're totally listener-supported. We rely on donations from people like you.
And SiriusXM. Too.
Please prayerfully consider making a monthly donation to support AM 1160 The Quest.
And now back to Honest to God, What's on Your Mind? A show for young adults by young adults on AM 1160 The Quest.
Still rocking and rolling with Patrick and Joey and JJ. The first segment of the show was incredible. We got into a lot of good stuff, and I want to keep rolling. I want to keep going down that line. Did anybody have anything else? Because I felt like I cut you off, Patrick, a little bit. My favorite quote I wrote down here that you said was, through the failure of the secular world, Christians, right, can step up. Because once again, if it is true, if it is good, it is beautiful, regardless of whether or not you believe in any of those things, regardless of whether or not you believe in any of those concepts, by virtue of you being a human with a soul, you are going to be drawn to that which is true, good, and beautiful. What are some examples? Like, how can we step up?
Well, I mean, for once, I see this more with Western thought than I do with Eastern. But like, one is not to be scared of the mythological. So like, in the Western world, we tend to try to play the same game that materialists are playing. So, you know, when materialists are like, well, you have dragons in the Bible, they're obviously not real. Like, why am I supposed to believe in that? Instead of trying to explain it in the like psychological way or something, be like, yes, because dragons are real and we face them every day. Right. As a matter of fact, there was a dragon in 2020 that burned down Minnesota, right? Like, they're not like, these experiences are real. And so it's kind of like, I know there's like, Knights of the Columbus recently put out a documentary, I believe, on Mother Teresa, and documentaries are great, but it's kind of like, let's take the saints. Like, I always give an example of John Bosco. He had a dog named
Grigio
that would come out and protect him. You have a fantastic, weird relationship there between like this dog and this saint that you can make either a series or a movie out of. And, you know, and it doesn't have to be necessarily just like a bio flick. You can like enchant it, you can say a little bit, because that's how we view the world that way, in the same way too.
It blows my mind. And that is a common complaint about modern pop media, everything. But it blows my mind about how many wonderful stories that have not been told are out there. And we just recycle the same popcorn, brain dead nonsense over and over. I'm not knocking it, y'all. One of my favorite movies is Pacific Rim. Here's why. Because I don't have to think at all during Pacific Rim. And sometimes I want that. The whole plot of Pacific Rim is big robots fight big monsters. The end. There's no romance. There's no deeper thinking. Yep. There's no philosophical content. There's no philosophical ideas that are tackled. Nope. That's it. Robots, monsters. Great. That's fine. But there's so many wonderful stories that we're just not tapping into for the sake of, I don't know, cash grabs on nonsense.
I think one big issue that I see, like in modern media especially, but I think it's something that has always plagued art in general, which is authenticity. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing that that you can feel in a piece of art, is you can feel if the author, if the filmmaker, if the director was, if he was passionate about it, if the playwright knew like what he wanted to do, if the actors truly believe in the lines that they're saying, if they think that it is a good thing, if they are passionate about it, you can feel that coming through. And then more and more today, we are coming to things that they may be passionate about it, but it's not the right kind of passion. They're passionate to say a message, like we were saying earlier.
Right.
They're passionate to just get their thoughts across instead of just telling the story that is on their heart, showing the piece of art that has been put inside of themselves that they have been given and that to show others.
Can you give an example of something that is modern and popular that is true, good, and beautiful?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. One film that I saw recently, it's called Phantom of the Open. It is a very indie, low budget film, or medium budget is medium budget films have just kind of been going out of style lately. It's either huge theatrical or
super art house
or zero budget. So it's a mid budget film. And it's a true story about this guy in his like mid 50s who's lived just a very typical average life in Britain, you know, grew up in Scotland during like the Blitz and things like that. And then he gets like to the mid late 50s and he wants to start playing golf. So he enters the British Open.
Cool.
Biggest golf tournament in the world to learn how to play golf and plays the worst game of golf ever in the history of the British Open. And so and through this, it tells this beautiful story of a man not trying to chase popularity or fame or fortune, but just trying to enjoy his life and not being sad that he missed out on all these things. He didn't start playing golf earlier, but that he has found this joy that can be in his life now. Cool. And he doesn't care about everybody saying, oh, he's the worst golf player in the world. Oh, everybody hates him. you know, all these things. He's just enjoying what he's doing, and he enjoys being there. And it's a very family focused movie, and it shows, like, you know, his kids being like kind of mad at him that he's getting kind of popular because people are saying that he's really bad at playing golf, and so it's reflecting bad on them that he's not good at golf, and so they're mad at him. And so it's this beautiful story of just living your life and being the man that you need to be and just enjoying yourself.
And some of the most beautiful art follows that theme of when the artist believes in it and the artist is doing something they want, that like beauty and belief, it will show through the art at some point.
Yeah.
There's the converse, which is like some really poppy songs that, yes, they grab some traction because they're playing the system, but those songs never endure. But art that the artist really believes in will always be appreciated at some point. Like Van Gogh, he believed it. He believed in his art. No one else did.
Well, I'm glad you threw out a few hundred years. Van Gogh too, because I want to make it super clear that we're not here to be super hipstery and just like crap on things that are like popular. Like there are popular things that are that are beautiful, but I do agree that sort of generationally, right, in our modern Western epoch, right, sort of where we are right now culturally, it seems to be a de-emphasizing on what was, since civilization started, right, this focus on beauty and goodness and art for art's sake almost. I don't know where I want to go with that. Any thoughts?
I mean, no, art for art's sake is so good because people think it's what y'all were saying about people prioritize the message over the art form, and that destroys the art. And it, I think it comes from like this idea that art, that the world is bad and has to be corrected somehow, and we have to sneak the good thing in.
Right.
There's a show I watch and it had such a funny line. It was like Mennonites talking about dancing. Okay. And they said, dancing is a vertical expression of a horizontal intention.
Okay.
And I thought that was so funny, but it gets me thinking, dancing, music, like paintings, they're not bad things naturally, which we have to find some good thing to talk about with them to make them good. If they're good and beautiful on their own, they can just be good and beautiful in their own right. Because anything that's focused on beauty will be good on its own.
Right.
The art will also help. You can see almost the state of humanity's heart as a whole by looking at what art it's putting out. So like recently, I mean, the art has been really satanic, not just in terms of, you know, showing like demonic stuff, but it's, there's no wholeness to it. Like even the recently Boston revealed the statue of Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
And it was just hands. There's no face. There's no head. It's like this. It's like this. Just like they do art for art's sake. They almost, how do you put, hyper focus on something instead of looking at something at a whole. So, I mean, the intention of that artist was to show the embrace, but we see the embrace when we see the whole person. Like you don't need to isolate that. It doesn't make sense. And so it kind of becomes hideous instead of something beautiful.
Well, and one thing that I've been saying recently, I was talking to a group of high school kids about this not too long ago. I feel like we have all of these attempts to shock, right? There's all this controversy. You said the word satanic. It just made me think of all that controversy over the show at the Emmys with some guy, I don't know his name, but right, he did this thing and it was overtly, there were devil horns and fire or whatever. And I'm going to try to censor this as much as I can for radio. Being a devil worshiping prostitute is just really boring now. It's just been done so many times. The attempts to shock aren't even shocking. What would be shocking is, hey, here's a genuinely beautiful performance of something. We're going to have this opera singer come up and do this beautiful rendition of whatever, right? That would be such a shock and so exciting. But the attempt to just reduce art to this shock value and cultural attack and whatever that's been more and more common since, I mean, the countercultural movement of the 60s and 70s, I feel like they won. And we're living in that culture, that counterculture, and it's just boring.
And I think it's an interesting thought, but it's like in the crowd, do the people have the capacity to receive something beautiful like the opera singer, like you're saying? And that's kind of what we were talking about before. It was like there is a subjective element to how much we can appreciate objective beauty. And so like our the task for like growing as a human is to kind of expand our capacity to like stretch our hearts to be able to like stay in the beauty. Like, right. I don't know if you've had this experience, but you talk about you've had trip to the mountains with your friends and you talk about, oh yeah, it's going to be so great. And then you get to the mountain and you see like the beauty of it. And, but it's like hard for me to stay looking at how awesome the mountain is.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about? It's like, I'm so used to being distracted. Right. I'm so used to being, what's the next thing, that like to stay and just like soak in the beauty of it is hard. It's like it's like a muscle that needs to be worked.
So, and we've talked about that forever ago on the show, but an analogy that I've used a lot is poetry. I want to like poetry, right? I want to read great poetry. I want to enjoy it, right? Mm-hmm. And I view it sort of as like my, like with coffee, right? So I just said to Janice a few minutes ago, she said, would you like me to make you a cup of coffee? Because we're going to film another show after this. I got a lot of time to talk. And I used to not like coffee, right? But then I started drinking coffee for utility because I wanted to like coffee, right? I was going to drink coffee because I wanted the impact of coffee on me, right? So I started drinking coffee, just straight up black coffee, whatever they had, coffee brand coffee, I don't care, give me the cheap stuff, whatever. And over time of just sort of choking down my coffee every morning for the purpose of, you know, staying awake, I started to learn things about coffee and things that I liked and I enjoyed. And now I like a little bit of this and I prefer this roast from here and I like it, all of these things. And I've realized it's been the same. My journey with coffee has literally run parallel to my journey with poetry. I started forcing myself to read poetry. And at first it was just like, because I've been trained to be this immediate gratification kind of guy. And I'm force feeding myself like Percy Shelley and all of this stuff. And over time, though, I start to realize, oh, no, I actually kind of like, oh, that's interesting. Oh, I'm drawing these connections. Yes. And what it is my heart having almost scales fall from it, right? And all of a sudden realizing, oh, my goodness, this is amazing. This is speaking to me as a human being in a way that scrolling through Reddit on my phone is in no way satisfying.
Yeah.
I mean, I also liked, so in terms of talking, like almost like a hierarchy of art, I view the highest form of art, obviously liturgical, but under that would be something like folk art, not necessarily like opera or ballet, because for me, art, like once again, should be something participative that involves everybody. So something like if you go to some town in Europe that has a particular dance that's involved with it, like everybody comes together and it builds community to go around that dance.
Right.
Something like opera and ballet is already one step disconnected.
That's interesting.
Where it's made for somebody to just watch it. So
is it an accessibility issue too? Sorry to interrupt.
I mean, a little bit. I mean, because if you go into ballet, you have to take particular classes and stuff to be able to do it. So I'm not saying anything necessarily is wrong with ballet, but art for me, the highest purpose of art, which I would say, to be participative. That's why, like when I mentioned in the beginning, like I think it's silly something that like a museum exists, that you just, it's art is just something that you go in and like look at, right? It should be, you know, like if you go into an Eastern church or even Western church, it's like, you know, the icons or statues that are there are something that you participate with, like it helps you to visualize what you're praying to. I mean, with iconography, there's something even deeper there, because like windows to heaven, it's almost like you're you can see the image of God there and stuff like that. So higher, like what you said, sometimes when there's like accessibility stuff where there's with ballet and stuff, it just kind of, there's already like one level of disconnect that's there.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. I would love to spend a couple of hours talking about the hierarchy of art. And I've never heard of it. I've never heard anybody speak to the participatory nature of art, right? Because that makes sense to me. If I'm the worst dancer in town, but I'm coming together for this festival that we have every year and I'm participating in this, like what a beautiful, good thing that is, regardless of my skill in it as the artist. Right?
Yeah, it builds identity too. I mean, part of what we look at culture is like, what does it mean? We were talking earlier about like, cause I'm Polish. So like, what does it mean to be Polish, right? It's our stories, it's our folk songs, it's all the dances and stuff we do. That's what helps us build our identity, right? And it's the same thing when we go to Mass or Divine Liturgy, it's the same thing. All that music and stuff that we do, it helps us build an identity and culture. It's like, that's why you know who a Catholic, like when you go into a Catholic church, you know it's Catholic for the most part, because that's the identity. Like it helps build an identity, yeah.
I loved what you were saying about liturgical art, and I'd like to kind of go down that rabbit hole a little bit. And once again, I don't want this to just be a complaining session about churches that look like, you know, fast food joints or whatever, but there's a lot of those, unfortunately. But I am curious, just open this up to anybody. I love having JJ here, especially as a visiting Catholic, like I was saying earlier, I think off air, but the bells and the smells, man, y'all get them down. It is beautiful and it is good. And it lifts me to heaven in a way that I'm not lifted to heaven in a mega church with, you know, nothing on the walls and just somebody giving me a motivational speech. But I think we would all agree that art plays a necessary role in worship. But I'm curious about that, what that is and how it's done correctly and incorrectly. And I'd love to hear anybody's thoughts.
I mean, for me, something that's been super awesome, and it actually came out of a very bad thing, which is kind of how God works. But years ago, my like lifelong priest at my parish, he was getting really old and he blacked out while he was driving. So he was in the hospital for a little bit. So we had a couple interim priests, and one of them looked around and he was like, these icons are good, but there's a lot of empty wall space.
Yeah.
So he had a whole big project that was his thing when he was there, was putting icons all over the wall. So cool. You walk in and right wall icons, left wall icons, back wall icons, and icons. I love icons.
I love icons too.
And to get into symbolism, something that I learned about icons, which is my favorite thing, is you see Mary, and she always, I believe, is a blue undergarment with a red cloak over her. But Jesus, it's the reverse. It's a red undergarment with a blue cloak. And it's because there's the symbolism they chose there is I always mix it up. But I believe blue is
humanity.
Yeah. Blue is like the earth, humanity. And red is meant to represent divinity. And it kind of shows like Mary is more of a human, but she has this sort of, not divinity, she's not divine, she's a human, but she has this divine beauty attributed to her through the graces and merits of her son. But Jesus, he's kind of thought of, he was God before he was man. So that's why.
That's interesting. So he's put on this cloak, but he's clothed with the incarnation. He's incarnating himself with humanity. I had no idea.
That's when Jesus on the Chosen wears the blue cloak,
right?
In the Sermon on the Mount too.
Oh, really?
Deciding what to wear, Mary tells him wear blue.
That's art there.
But
that's
art. And so she's clothed in red, but wearing the blue clothing. Like it's like we have to really show an icon to get it. But
it's cool. I should have brought an icon.
They obviously should be based on either tradition or what's in the Gospels. So, I mean, so the creation of Adam in the Sistine Chapel, for example, drives me crazy.
Okay.
Because I think that's part of the problem of like this, of what materialists call like the sky daddy problem or whatever. Because first, I like the East because they kind of solve the problem of like how to represent God. So God incarnated looks like Christ. So anytime, whether it was before his birth, like even if they have an icon, the creation of the world, it's always Christ
right
there. And so here in the creation of Adam, first of all, you have this Zeus looking guy that's like based on nothing. So, I mean, I don't know. So you have that character. You don't even know necessarily who he is. And then what's with the finger thing? So in the scripture, it says he breathed life into us, which is important. And so there's no touch there. I mean, it's kind of like this arbitrary drawing that means nothing. I mean, skillfully it was well done. Sure, like obviously it's well painted. There's nothing I can paint, but the message is there's no message. There's no meaning or message there.
I'm into it. I dig it.
So
The theology of the body guy has to respectfully disagree.
super curious.
It's great though, because it's two sides. This is how like diverse art is that it can, you know, it's not so rigid to where you have to believe this exactly about art, right? I would say in defense of the Sistine Chapel, John Paul II called the Sistine Chapel the ode to the theology of the body, right? Mm-hmm. And what I agree though, it's like to depictions of God. I mean that is as problematic with us thinking like, you know, God is what is the word, anthropomorphizing God, like in the clouds, right? But why that's significant for that is if you look in the arm of God, you see the Sistine Chapel, that image you're talking about, it's depicted like a brain,
Yeah, I've seen that.
And so it's like the mind of God, and there's a bunch of angels all around them, but not all of them are angels. One of them is Eve in the arm of God. Huh. And so as Adam is looking into Eve, like their eyes are looking into another, like, and this is the whole point of theology of the body. Like, God has no body. God doesn't have fingers, hands, and toes, but God created a male and female so that I really see the image of God through the body. I really touch the image of God through the body, right? That like in the visible creation, the body and only the body makes visible the image of God. Nothing else in creation does, right? So that, and that's the splendor of it.
Yeah. I mean, the man is the image of God, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. But there's still something about it that, I mean, that's off to me. I would say it's almost like it's not traditional. It's unscriptural to a certain extent. So I don't think it necessarily like belongs in a church. Let's say that's a chapel. But yeah, I mean,
how do you respond to Protestants that say any depiction of God? I'm not saying all Protestants, but there's definitely a healthy strain of them that do. Any depiction of the divine is somehow, they're iconoclasts, right? And they're against them.
Right. So this gets into huge things. I mean, you bring up iconoclasm,
you
right?
Got about 6 minutes. So
okay.
Let's hear it, Joey.
Here we go. So yeah, I mean, there was historically in the church a real problem with getting stuck on icons. Right. And almost worshiping these icons and getting confused with like images of God or statues of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And so the attempt, the solution was let's throw them all away. Right. And that's what iconoclasm refers to. Right. But both of these extremes are not really the answer. Right. The goal is how do I keep the icon that points me to the deeper reality without turning the icon into an idol? Right. In our culture, the way we understand the human body is in the same way, right? The one of the greatest icons that God makes visible is human sexuality, right? And the same argument that you said could be said to that, like how could we conceive or talk about that being like God? Because doesn't it fall short of the splendor of who God is? Yeah, of course it does. Any analogy falls like dramatically if it contains like anything similar, it's an equal or greater dissimilarity. But even so, God created us to live in a sacramental reality, a world of icons. And if we try to pretend like we're not, we're doing like the iconoclasm.
Well, he didn't just create us, right? He entered into that same
and he entered into
reality.
That sacramentality. Right. And we missed the whole point. That's the good news of Christianity, is we can actually reclaim the icons to be what they're meant to be, but not get stuck on them.
My personal analogy that I always think of is I think of icons and statues as like a FaceTime call, but with like really, really bad Wi-Fi. So no one dishes on FaceTime except for when it has bad Wi-Fi. But FaceTime is a good thing. You're able to look at the person you're talking to, who you love or care about, and that helps you think about them and feel closer to them. And you don't treat the phone like them.
So I was going to say, it obviously fails in comparison to the actual human. Yeah.
Exactly. But it's still a good thing because it helps direct you to them. Like, icons are very crappy FaceTime calls to heaven.
It's the best we got.
But it's also like, you know, like we mentioned before we went to this question, is man is an image of God. And so God took on that image. And so, in a way, when you take a picture of your family or something, that's an icon of your family, right? You can say. So, you know, you have these icons of your family to remember these little memories, like these little blots of memories that you have with them. And that's the same thing what an icon is. It's just a picture of what the gospel is saying, you can say, right? So it's, it kind of doesn't make sense not to be able to, because if you're venerating, you can say the biblical text, what's the difference if I draw what the biblical text is saying? Because we're also visual animals,
we're physical creatures that God made physically to interact physically with them.
Yeah, exactly. It's like full participation. Yeah,
something my mom always said is you were talking about how people are in a way icons because they reflect God, and that's not an accident, which is kind of the whole point of theology of the body. But my mom would tell us when we were praying, she's like, look at an icon, look at something pretty outside, or look at each other. Those are like the three options she would give us, because all three of those things are beautiful things, which when viewed in their right light can help direct us to God. Well, that's something beautiful. I hold on to.
I like that a lot.
I'm going to look at you when I pray, John Henry.
Thanks. Yeah. I really appreciate that. I don't want to brag, but I was made in the image and likeness of God. So, you know. So we are running low on time. One thing I want to make sure that we throw out right now is where they can hear more from you and where they can see more of what you've created over there. So,
At the moment, I'm on Instagram as Holy7 in Roman numerals, VII. At the moment, I'm just on Instagram, but eventually I move on to YouTube as well. But that's where I talk about this kind of stuff similar to it.
Fantastic. I dig it.
Yeah. So the productions of Gardenet, it will be happening in Atlanta in the last weekend in July, first weekend in August of 2023. We are, if you're a local actor talent, not sure when this is going to air, but auditions will be in April. Again, you could find more at gardenthemusical.com. The first production of this play in New Orleans, we did back in 2017, it completely sold out every performance, every ticket before the opening night, even.
Right.
So I'd recommend getting your tickets early, but, yeah, incredible opportunity to experience, and to connect, not just in like a lecture setting, but in a heart setting, these profound, good and true, beautiful truths that we've been talking about tonight.
I love it. JJ, you can just care about your MySpace or something.
Yeah. I've deleted like all of it. So I was going to ask, is there a website we can use to keep track of that?
Gardenthemusical.com.
Gardenthemusical.com.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have today for the radio. If you want to keep listening to this episode, be sure to head over to YouTube or check us out on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
This has been Honest to God, What's on Your Mind? A show for young adults by young adults on AM 1160, The Quest.